Food Fight Radio on KCBQ is sponsored by FranVest International, Inc.
Welcome, folks, to the special commercial-free Best Of episode of Food Fight. This is the special show where we put all our favorite moments of the entire year together in a blender and hit puree. Now, we all know you loyal listeners have never missed a show, but that's okay. We're going to do this anyway. Now, sit back, relax, pop some popcorn, and enjoy our most poignant, poetic, and stellar moments of Food Fight Radio 2013.
Now for your moment of clarification.
Folks, we at Food Fight Radio realize that as loyal listeners, you may feel the need to get to know us better. To get a bit below the surface of the crispy skin and get into the real meat of what makes us tick as people, as hosts, and as insufferable know-it-alls. We love that about you. Of course, in order to get to know a person really deep down beneath the PC politeness and several layers of not rocking the boat, there's the honest core. And the best way to get down to that core is not to find out what makes a person happy, but to discover what really, really pisses them off. It is for that reason that we share what ails us, what gets our goat, and what ruffles our feathers. And today we're going to dig down to the nougaty center of the one, the only, the steely-eyed and chubby-cheeked Chef Marcus.
Aww.
You go, boy.
All right. So, ladies, how come whenever you're in a relationship, you don't think it's necessary to shut the door when you're going to the bathroom? Now, I thought it was just me and my wife. I talked to my married friends and my friends in relationships. Women, once you're in a relationship with someone, you don't shut the door. We know what's going on in there. We don't want you knowing what's going on when we're in there. And we don't want to see, most of all, smell what's going on when you're in there.
It's a food show. Stop. You know that, right? This is a food show.
It's
what's the matter
show
with you?
I'm
just
saying,
my God. This really ticks Marcus off.
Really upsets me. Like, I went my whole adolescent life thinking women didn't even do that.
We don't.
And I wake up and realize, okay, they do, but I don't want to know about it. So please just shut the door.
Shut the door.
It's nothing.
It's
just
French.
Shutting the door.
The French aren't actually saying I love you. They're saying jette de del.
Shut the door.
Shut the door. What you're saying is maintain that air of mystery.
I know what's going on in there. I just don't want to be a part of it.
Again, it's a food show.
It's a food show.
Okay, food show.
Okay. Let me move on. All right. All right. You go to the doctor's office. You have an appointment. How come even if you show up 10, 15 minutes early, they don't see you until at least a half hour after your appointment? I made an appointment. It's not just show up and we'll see you.
Well, their time is more valuable than yours.
Well, no, I'm there. I made an appointment. I'm paying them. I mean, without me, they have no money. Then how come they can't honor my appointment or at least look me in the eye and say, oh, I'm sorry, we're going to be this amount.
They treat you all the same. They put you in a little room. They say, get in there and take your pants off.
Yeah, and then you go into the office, right? You go into the doctor's lounge and then you wait for another hour. So it's an hour and a half after your appointment. You get to see, oh, the nurse. Thanks. I came here to see my doctor. You're the nurse. I understand. You're more educated than me in these things. But I came here to see the doctor. I made an appointment with Dr. Scratch and Sniff. How come he's not here to help me out? It's just very frustrating. Then talk about food, butchering. I love my butcher. My butcher is an artist. So how come whenever I sing a song poorly, is everybody like, hey, are you a butcher? Because you butchered that song. Did I make it better? Did I cut out all the fat? Did I remove all the sinew you can't stand and bring you a perfect song? No, I destroyed it. So how come this butcher, who's an artist, who makes filet mignon, who makes every steak you want perfectly, do you relate him to destroying something beautiful? Why do you do that, people? I'm tired of hearing that. And then this is, okay, you go to the store, right? I go to the store a lot. And now they have all these stupid yellow bumps when you leave. Whenever you go into the parking lot, you leave, there's all these yellow bumps. Like, hey, we want you to break all our eggs. Ah! Oh, we want you to spill your milk. We want you to shake up all your soda so you can't have it on the way home. What is this about? This is for those idiots who text while they're walking out of the store so they don't get hit by a car. They deserve to. Ah! 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 They deserve to be hit by a car. I don't deserve to have everything in my car destroyed to save their life. They're idiots. Oh, it pisses me off so much.
You feel better?
Yeah.
Do you feel better?
Man, it's been a rough week for you.
All I can say is you got to calm down, man. You're bursting some blood vessels here.
I'm looking for an expert to set.
I can say, give him a taste of the other white meat. Yeah. And that, folks, was the sound of a nerdy white man laying down the law. Bold words for a guy that drives a Kia milk carton and reads comics. Honestly, I've never met anyone more straight-laced. This is a man who steams his veggies, lets mosquitoes bite him out of politeness, and actually owns 10-sided dice.
They need to feed their young. That's
so it takes a lot to get you riled up, is what I'm saying. Ugh. Let us thank Chef Marcus for sharing his closeted emotions with an appropriate Vulcan salute.
Hulk smash!
Actually, I was just going to say, live long and prosper, buddy.
Still mad.
Live long and prosper. Have you ever had a dinner guest say, "Hey man, I hope you didn't make anything with asparagus, dude, because I'm allergic." When this happens, I say, "Are you also allergic to onions, garlic, chives? No? Then you're not allergic to asparagus either. If you have a reaction to one member of the Lilisay family, then you should be sensitive to all of them. You just don't like the smelly pee that you get from asparagus, don't you? Get out of my house, you liar." Of course, that's just me. But this happens a lot. People claiming to have a food allergy when it's actually a preference. They are hassling you so they don't have to go through the trouble of pushing something off the side of their plate. You've spent hours making some tasty, pretty food, and this clown has no problem lying to guilt you into going to a bunch of extra trouble, making a whole other thing just for him. Such a lazy, selfish jerk should not be invited to dinner in other people's homes. That guy should have to cook for himself and stay at home forever. Again, maybe that's just me. You should all be mad at people like this, because this does happen a lot, and now, when people tell us they have a food allergy, we don't believe them. Classic boy who cried wolf. Stop lying about this stuff. It's serious. People can die. You want people to die just because you can't stop inconveniencing your friends? Shame on you. And then there's all you gluten people. You read a thing somewhere that if you've got these generic symptoms, then you're gluten intolerant. And another thing that says about half of all people now are thought to be gluten sensitive and this and that. Oh, this must also include me, you think. And then you read one of the side effects of this avoidance is weight loss. You think. That's a great way to lose weight and be a real pain at parties. You're feeling a bit dyspeptic and you turn to the popular culprit. Doctors say that symptoms of a food intolerance can include any number of stomach problems, a lack of concentration, migraines, aches and pains, skin problems, rashes, other skin symptoms, even brain fog and fatigue. You've just described a regular day in the life of every woman alive. At least you've narrowed it down. One of these doctors, who believe half of all people are sensitive, says about a third of those he's diagnosed report brain fog and headaches as their symptoms. Great detective work, doctors. You've just described me every Monday. I'm glad that $5 million study paid off. In reality, only 1% of people in the U.S. are sensitive to gluten. You think you're one of them? It's more likely that unwashed apple you ate for lunch. Look, if you always get sick after eating a piece of dry toast, then get back to me. Otherwise, it's more likely that you're just buying into the hype. Did you know there's no actual test for gluten sensitivity? So it's impossible to say for sure, which is another way of saying nobody knows. So all these studies are really just opinions of doctors who want to be right and others who want to sell you a book. So people will believe they are gluten intolerant because they have a rumbly tummy. There isn't one gluten intolerant person in China. They're selling extra gluten in stores there. You want to blame something? Blame yourself. It's you who declares yourself gluten sensitive, not a doctor, since even doctors admit there's no reliable test. And if you're diagnosing yourself, Dr. Egghead, then you have a fool for a patient. Because here's what happens when you go to the doctor. You say you really haven't been keeping track, but you get sick when you eat this thing. The doctor says, then says you need to follow a gluten-free diet, having no idea what he's recommending and relying on his patient for the diagnosis. So now your suspicions have been confirmed by an idiot who was only taking your word on it anyway. Now you're going to go all crazy, get rid of the gluten in your diet, in your life, and in your fridge. Then you throw out your kids' gummy bears because you don't want to be tempted. So you eliminate all bread and cereal and this and that, and then your symptoms miraculously go away. but you're still eating ketchup, instant coffee, smoked bacon, pickles, nuts, and you lick envelopes and use soap in the shower. All these have traces of gluten, sweetie, so if you're better, you've been barking up the wrong tree. It's this kind of cliff-diving lemming behavior that makes it possible for companies to sell us a bullcrap diet or book or food we don't need and make a ton of our money on it. It's because we all want an answer, a reason for our symptoms. Maybe it's too much sugar, too little protein, too many carbs, too much coffee, not enough water, not enough exercise, and too much TV. Maybe it's lack of sleep from staying up all night believing every chat room on the internet. It's not one thing. Get it through your heads. It's not one thing. It's everything. There are way too many foods, chemicals, garbage going into our stomachs, up our noses, getting soaked through our skin, all the hell we put our bodies through every day, and you really think we can pinpoint one thing for everything that's wrong with us? Why can't you just admit that it's a fad diet? Don't pretend you're all allergic to gluten. That means there's something wrong with you. You think it's better to tell people you're genetically defective than to admit you're trying to lose 10 pounds? You think people believe anyone when they blame their weight problem on an overactive thyroid? Nobody believes that. And no one believes you when you say you're allergic to gluten. If you were really that sick, you'd be keeping a detailed food diary. So if you don't have one, get one. Grab a pen, write, "I eat too much junk and I need to stop believing everything I read," and go get some sleep. Chuck E. Cheese. Do I really need to point this out? I know you're thinking it. Why now? Why today? Well, I think it deserves 3 minutes. Now, normally, we'll do darn near anything for our kids. We'd even take part in a fun new reality game where we get smothered in honey and covered with angry bees. But when they mention Chuck E. Cheese, we seize up and start frantically blurting excuses. I have to go to work today. I'm getting a root canal. And you actually consider calling the dentist just to be spared from the quarter-chinking, ring-dinging, yelling, screaming, pulling, yanking, cheap plastic, prize-hawking hell. Who over the age of 10 wants to go here? It has that carpet that used to be yellow but is so covered in pizza and puke stains that you'd swear it's colorful and fun. Yeah, fun. Like 10 years of ground-in baby poop. Oh, the plastic ceiling, bolted hamster tube plaything with its germ warfare slide, nets of snot, and stairs of dried-on pee that your kids can't resist, like some mosquitoes to your exposed thigh. Just when you were starting to think your kid was smart enough to skip a grade. And it's just about the best way to guarantee a week of sick kids at your house. There's always that family that comes in looking like they just got off the Walking Dead movie set. So you cover everyone in Purell and hope for the best. It's all fine and good until they want to turn in their tickets and it becomes clear to you that no part of the $2 million in annual sales goes toward the redeemable prizes. So while they play, you order pizza and you bide your time with the salad bar, making a base of browning iceberg lettuce and picking through edible bits of canned olives and beets. You can let the reality sink in that you chose this as a healthier option to pizza. That's okay. They have beer there. Good old-fashioned 16-ounce plastic cups of watered-down Bud that cost $5. What? Not since that lame kegger you attended at college hosted by that cheap accounting major. And these proceeds aren't going to charity. Ah, the pizza arrives, and you see the Domino's guy. Yeah, that's what I thought. This is for the kids, not me, is your new mantra. Now with the kids having eaten their fill of tomato-topped cardboard and cake from a mix that no one could fix, it's time for the Freaky Robot Show. These must have been the very first animatronics ever built. Nightmarish, in a weird flashback from a Twilight Zone that you can't quite remember kind of way. Then you hear it, that voice. Is that... Yes, it is. Jarrett Reddick from Bowling for Soup. You know that song, 1985, about the Prozac-popping, depressed 30-something that can't let go of her dream of sleeping with Duran Duran and hates her life? You know, her being a mother and having a husband with a good job? She is no longer young and doesn't know what's cool and hasn't a clue. This has to be a message from the big rat to the parents. You do not get it, and you never will, so just take your pills and give me your money. You do the math and realize that you just spent $60 on a 3-inch frisbee and 2 pencil erasers shaped like Mr. Peanut. Well played, rat. Well played. Folks, this is an actual recounting of my emotional roller coaster ride I recently experienced at the grocery store. Normally, when I shop, I see labels. I'm just like you, and these labels wouldn't be lies if they'd been placed on real healthy or even marginally unprocessed food. But yeah, you can tell these are lies. You know the lies, and you know certain truths. If it looks like someone broke up a table, it probably has whole grain in it. Otherwise, there's probably more fiber in a Slurpee. You know 50% fat usually still means it's half fat. A serving size of a quarter cup? Yeah, right, if you're two. That means it really has 2,000 calories and 6 days of sodium. I'm insulted. You should be insulted. It has the protein of licking a jar of peanut butter and the sugar of 12 Twinkies. At least you get to feel good knowing that the package is 100% recyclable when you go ahead and toss it in the trash. These are things that you know, but when you enter the grocery store, all that goes out the window. You're a wide-eyed, impressionable baby, a clean slate. I like to walk around in grocery stores whenever I'm feeling a lack of raw emotion as a human being. Forget sad movies and teary scenes. This is where I go. And I'm happy when I walk in. I like that artificial light glaring at me, leaching the moisture out of my eyeballs. It makes me feel like I'm in a sterile environment. I start strolling up the aisles. I see a giant box with ripe pumpkins for fall. That's nice. I see milk with a happy kid printed on the front and a stamp that says, not from cows treated with RBST. A faint smile crosses my lips. It's nice to know they're looking out for us. Walking on, I see omega-enhanced eggs and steroid-free salmon. Kinda obvious lies. Clear marketing double talk. I start thinking about it and realize what these labels are really saying is, hey, buy our food. That other food will give you a rash. I walk on, skeptically glaring. I have daggers in my eyes. How dare they? I view my grim outlook for a decent meal. I see hermetically sealed and triple washed. My mood lifts a bit. Could it be that in this marketing melee, there is a karmically righteous food maker out there? Pre-washed, pre-cooked, freeze-dried, double-wrapped, and vacuum-packed. For your safety, I'm safe. Here is something I can surely feel good about feeding my family. With a smile and a little spring in my step, I walk on with pleasant appreciation for the strange and alien label language. Maybe it's for our own good, like the helmet law. Maybe these lies are not to trick us into buying low-quality, nutritionally devoid products, but are in fact necessary. After all, they're protecting us from the germs, bugs, bacteria, E. coli, listeria, salmonella, rat feces, and fungal spores we'd be eating if it weren't for all these crazy processes and gas treatments. Maybe it was just the lights, but I head to the checkout with my well-thought-out purchases in tow, feeling immersed in a friendly world of scientific brotherhood and like minds, eager to see our kind move forward with health and honesty. On the way up through the cereal aisle, I anticipate a tasty morning fix, something good and good for me. I see cartoons and good guys, smiling characters ensuring me that my kids will be as happy with my choice as I am. I am confident in my state of consumer bliss that I will find the perfect breakfast cereal that defines me, that has just enough natural sweetener and slightly more nutrients than Silly Putty. This lasts until I spy the Crave brand chocolate-filled chocolate pillows enhanced with real chocolate and a big bright label that says, good source of fiber. And I think, maybe not. I head to the wine section. Now, I'm not saying that all restaurant servers are born without a sense of humor. Okay, yes, that's what I'm saying. No matter how semi-funny my opening comments are, I'm always met with this blank, dumb stare that says, this is as far as I'm going in life. I get that, yes, occasionally there might be the oddball exception, but this is generally with old-fashioned diners, and it's usually because your waitress is also the owner. Just a thought, but if your income depends upon your ability to convince a perfect stranger that you're worth an extra 15% for saying, here you go, you might just want to giggle a little bit when someone thinks they're being cute. And about that 15% tip thing. Let's say the food is bad. The cook should be penalized, not the waitress. This system assumes that the cook is doing a great job making this complicated thing that's easy to burn, and the most likely person to make a mistake is going to be the person who carries it from the kitchen to the table. All she has to do is not sneeze or trip. Who do you think is going to be the first one to screw up? There should be a tip line for the food and a tip line for the server, and both should total about 15%. If the server thinks they should be making more money, then they should talk to their boss, who's using me to allow him the ability to pay his staff less and say it's my fault for being a low tipper, or the server's fault for not smiling enough when they drop off my iced tea. This is the only industry that does that, folks. In other jobs, you can expect to get paid for simply showing up. No one tips the secretary for not spitting in their coffee. And if they're getting paid less for doing the same work where they then have to kiss up to other people to make more money, then they should be looking for a better job. I'd say it's in the best interests of a restaurant to just take the responsibility as the employer to keep the staff happy, because you can really mess with a person's food. And when they're mad at their boss, who do you think they take it out on? Right, you, the complete stranger who only wanted a tuna sandwich. If you get bad service, you should blame the restaurant owner for hiring a jerk or for making a nice person into one. Either way, it's their fault, not the server's. If I do have a problem, I like to leave a little message on the tip line, and usually it's, pay your cranky servers more so I don't have to. A while back, my husband and I were in the mood for a nice steak. If you've ever heard this show before, this will come as no surprise to you. And there happened to be a nice-looking steak place that we'd driven by a dozen times but for some reason never visited. Feeling adventurous and rather peckish, we found a good parking spot in a spacious lot. So far, so good. Once inside, we discover a nice, modern-looking place, which was different. For change of pace from the more traditional, darkly lit, heavy wood steak places we're used to. The menu looks classic and moderately priced, and like I said, we were peckish, and we had already parked the car, so we felt committed to the place. As we are led to our table by the hostess in the tight pants, I begin to feel something a bit out of place. We walk past a big grilling station in the middle of the room. Is this like one of those Japanese teppanyaki grill places where the cook flips knives and food and shrimp over your head and sets himself on fire right in front of you? It didn't look Japanese in here. But wait, why are people standing around the grill with tongs? Where's the cook? What kind of restaurant is this? Hey, what's this? I ask, pointing to the barbecuers. The hostess clarifies, oh, you cook your own steaks here. I notice several health code violations. That's clever, I say to her, but that's okay. We'll have the food made by your cooks. Oh no, she says, this is how it works. You can choose your cut of meat, and we'll bring it out for you to grill right here. Well, how much more is it to get you guys to cook it? We don't do that. I can't really remember what I may have mumbled as we left, but I'm thinking it wasn't completely complimentary, and I get that, as a chef, I'm certainly capable of grilling my own steak, but that's not why we left the house that day. That's not why we sat in traffic and parked. That's not why we paid for gas. And I can't imagine that was what all those poor, sweaty tong holders had in mind when they let themselves be conned into burning their own meat for $27. Meat which they couldn't send back when they realized there's a reason they wear a clip-on tie for a living. What, I wonder, could be the thinking behind letting the least qualified people prepare the most important part of the meal when the experienced and probably well-paid cooks in the back are tasked with the side dish? And what kind of bored, money-burning suit would want to pay to cook his own meal? And if you have to cook your own food, shouldn't it be cheaper? A steak is worth $27 only when a business with overhead makes an investment into its preparation by hiring skilled staff to prepare it. Those dumb, tong-wielding patsies don't look skilled. They look nervous, and rightly so. One wrong flip, one high-leaping flame, and they ruin the meat and lose their eyebrows. You may be thinking to yourself, that's not too crazy. Paying to cook your own food, that's not that ridiculous. Let me then expand in a way that you can relate to. Would you pay $100 to detail your own car? How about $50 to mow your own lawn? How does paying $45 to wash your own dog sound? Starting to get angry? I know I am. That's right. When you do the work yourself, things should be cheaper. I can make my own steak at home for a lot less, and I can make a better martini. And I can be rude to myself. I don't need a sleazy-looking waitress for that. Next, there will be a spa where you can massage yourself for $90, or a cobbler where you can pay to polish your own shoes, or a golf course where you pay a ton of money to carry your own clubs around. Wait, okay. You just got to admit that golf is stupid. I'm pretty sure that this cook-your-own steak thing started as a big joke and was just a bunch of chefs feeling unappreciated and they took things a bit too far. They never expected people to actually fall for it. They just wanted to be loved. But stupid is as stupid does, and this, my friends, is stupid. Of course, a little bell may go off when the chef comes out and asks you how everything tastes, and you say, oh, it's fine. Hey, wait a sec, I made this. And he just starts laughing his head off. Worst part is, they'll still expect a tip. Have you ever noticed that when you eat at a Thai restaurant and place your order, the server always asks you how spicy you'd like your food, and then they give you a scale of 0 to 5? You would think, logically, that 0 would be totally mild, and 1 would be some spice. 5 would be pretty hot, probably more hot than you'd really like, but you know some people order it that way, and so 5 must still be at a human tolerance level, so you order a 1, because you don't want spicy, but you also don't want your food to be bland. You think that by ordering a 1, that you're being safe, that you're being conservative. That's because you're not Thai. Here's how the scale really works, based on my understanding and considerable experience. This has happened to me many times. I order the number 1 on the scale, and my thinking is that 1 will have a bit of spice, and the 2 will, let's say, have a maximum of twice the spice of a number 1. If you did this, you'd be wrong. This is not how the scale works. If you're familiar with the Richter scale, that's more like how the spicy Thai scale in a Thai establishment works. This isn't a step up of one level. This is 10 times the level. A number 2 is like 10 times the spice of a number 1. You know how an earthquake of 6.0 pretty much knocks a vase off your desk, and a 7.0 knocks cars off a bridge? That's what that's like. Who are these freaks that are ordering a spicy number 5? You'd have to be insane, or you lost a bet. That's dare food. If you're a smoker with no taste buds, fine. But for everyone else, that just doesn't clear out your sinuses. It makes your whole brain slide out. I've redone that scale to help with your ordering the next time you find yourself in a Thai establishment and you get this little list laminated. Keep it in your wallet and use it as a reminder the next time you're feeling a tad adventurous. And when the server comes and asks you how spicy is the number 1, and the little prankster says, oh, the spicy number 1 has just a little bit of spice, you can remember this scale. A level 0 is totally mild. 1 is every pepper in the world. 2 is eating lava. 3 is licking the sun. 4 is French kissing death. And 5 is swallowing a supernova. That bit of information should keep you in the clear until the next time you find yourself ordering at an Indian restaurant where the spicy scale is less like a Richter scale and more like warp. Just in case you're not a giant nerd, warp is cubed. So in layman's terms, that spicy number 2 I ate last week at Bombay was like noshing on the Big Bang. That's a spicy meatball. Foie gras is that super silky, bulging, distressed duck liver, which is so desired, so tasty, so controversial, that even a politician as buff as Arnold won't take a stand. That's how PETA got the ban passed into law. Those weak little pudding-brained emotional susbuckets that are more concerned for the welfare of a darn duck than starving and suffering people. That's right. They could march for cancer research, childhood hunger, immunizations for underdeveloped countries where people die of a hangnail. But no, they've decided to focus all their attention on a duck, and not even a cute duck. Have you ever tried to pet one? Those things are mean. They don't just bite. They follow you for miles and come after your families. And so you ask, do they deserve to die for that? Yes, yes they do. If you're gonna be delicious, then you should tread lightly around human beings. These ducks have it coming. And what's all the fuss about? It's the gavage. It's the way they're force-fed extra grain to get their livers all nice and chubby. Sure, if this was done to people, that would be torturous and inhumane, you say. It's cruel, you say. You ignoramus, do you think the duck farmers came up with it? You got it. People have been doing this to people. for centuries, to prisoners on a hunger strike, to the imprisoned suffragettes in the early 1900s who just wanted the right to vote, to prisoners of war where they're force-fed down their noses with foods their religion forbids, to young skinny girls to fatten them up before being married off. PETA, you're misguided, ignorant, and you have got to sort out your priorities. People are more important than ducks. And yes, this practice is still being done today, and people are nothing like ducks, are they? They overeat themselves before migration, where their livers are supposed to bulge up to 4 times their natural size. And unlike people, they have a throat made just for this, with a built-in trap that stores the food before heading down, and that's where the gavage pipe goes. This thing has no gag reflex. When done to people, it's barbaric. When done to ducks, it's dinner. And you know what, PETA? You've accomplished nothing. You got the foie banned only in California and not very successfully. You've opened up a whole black market for foie that's doing quite well. And restaurant owners, listen to this. You can still serve the foie. It's illegal to buy. It's illegal to sell. But if you serve a $40 piece of toast and it happens to come with a free piece of foie on top, guess what? That's completely legal. There's nothing that anyone can do about it. So, PETA, did you save any ducks? Nope. They're still making it, still selling it, still cooking with it, and still eating it. I had a foie burrito for breakfast. And if we foodies find out that your little grass-fed, free-range, hormone-free livers taste good, we'll be serving you with some fava beans and a nice Chianti. Bon appetit! With me in studio is a man who's just a bit smarter than a bag full of hammers. Chef Marcus.
I don't know about that one.
I say that, folks, because we're about to eat balut.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It stinks so bad.
Marcus is freaking out. It's weird. The experience of opening my egg is somewhat a little bit different than Marcus's.
Yes.
I assume there's something disgusting on the inside. Marcus's egg looks like... What does that look like to you?
It looks like someone ate a baby duck and vomited it on a big fat egg yolk.
And then shaped it into a circle.
That has a bunch of veins going through the whole thing.
That's sick.
Because the yolk is here.
That is nasty, bro.
So I think this was going to be twins.
Ew.
And, oh, there's its eye looking at me.
Oh, no. There's an eye.
that's messed
up. Oh!
Yeah, that's a fully formed
We're looking at this is wrong. This is, don't eat that part. Eat around it. Eat around it. I'm telling you.
It's mush. I have to just take a bite.
Oh, all right. Well, anyway, we put copious amounts of salt on these things. See, salt. You need salt.
We're doing
a segment on salt. You know what? We got to... Okay, on three.
Oh, God. Okay.
Ready?
Oh,
balut.
Wait. Get your camera. Take a picture of this before I eat it.
This is going to crap up the website badly. And they don't smell nice.
Oh, no, they don't.
They have a smell that is... Like, I don't know. It's... Well, but the... Ew, back it up a little bit. That's too close. Too close. Ew, you look so unhappy in this picture. We're going to put this on the website. because we have to. We put the trash can over here by Marcus just in case something foul happens. Grab that thing.
Recycling, which is what I'll be doing if I eat it.
I think that thing has already been recycled, my friend.
Recycled.
All right. On three. Don't be a wuss.
I'm not being a wuss. I'm going to do it. I just don't want to.
All right. My thing is different. All right. Go. Wow. Delicious, right? Spit it out. Spit it out. Really horrifying, huh?
Yes.
Oh. Oh, good. You got a mint.
Yeah.
Okay. Folks, I do not have a baby duck.
Oh, you have an egg.
I have an egg.
You tricked me on purpose. I noticed there was a dot on mine. I didn't see on yours.
Yeah, you know.
You did that on purpose.
Yeah, well.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I don't have a baby fetal duck in my egg, folks. That looks like what I have here is just a regular hard-boiled duck egg.
You don't have a duck. That is
tough luck for me.
Mean, horrible. I quit.
All right, you know what? Well, I was going to take a bite out of your egg, but you already threw it in the trash, so I can't.
Well, lucky for you.
Lucky for me. That's a tasty duck egg, though. Here, have a bite of this, because it's so much tastier.
No.
He is never going to touch another duck egg for the rest of his life, folks. And you know what? Where I bought these, they had little cafe tables standing off to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people sitting at them, and they were selling hot balut, ready to go, and handing it out, and your eyes are bloodshot and like red.
Oh, yeah.
They're eating them. They were just sitting there eating them. Just sitting there.
Where'd you buy these?
I got these at the street fair on Mira Mesa Boulevard.
Wow.
Yeah. And they have all kinds of tasty things, but they also have a couple of ethnic foods. And in the area of Mira Mesa, I guess there's a high Filipino population.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very popular street food, I guess, back home.
Can I have one of your paper towels just to clean up this mess?
Oh, yeah, sure.
George wasn't wet.
There you go.
I opened mine up, and it was just liquid poured out.
I think that was part of the baby duck.
Part of the baby duck, probably.
It was liquefied. You need to, he spat that out, obviously, and he's going to probably hate me for the rest of my life.
No more than normal, but yeah.
We do all kinds of selfless things on this show for your enjoyment, see? So you know that buffet place in your neighborhood? You drive by it every day on your way home from work. You've looked at it, saw the 40% off sign next to the sun-faded banner showing what you think might be a crab. Maybe you've turned and said to your wife, "One day we should eat there." And she looks at the place as you fly on past it and shrugs and says, "Okay." That's the exact place we're reviewing today. Now, I know what you're thinking. How can Claire know what place that is? Has she been spying on us? Did Food Fight Radio hire some greaseball to follow us around, find out what we say and where we eat? I'm not going to dignify that with an answer. Yes, I did. And I'm betting your meal went a little something like this. Firstly, these are very pretty places to walk into, aren't they? There's always a big Buddha fountain or a tranquil koi pond that you're not allowed to touch. A polite hostess in a tight kimono smiles sweetly and leads you to a table in a huge arena-sized room that looks like a high school cafeteria. Except, unlike high school, everyone here is shorter than you. You debate leaving your purse behind to hit the buffet, but leave it anyway, and follow the food. Here's where the adventure starts. Grabbing a plate from a spring-loaded stack, you quickly survey the offerings and try to decide where to go first. You can't tell the difference between the desserts and the appetizers, but the seafood looks familiar, so you start there. "This is gonna be awesome," you say to yourself, and contemplate bringing along two plates just to be sure you get everything for your first course. Mmm, chilled seafood, crab legs, shrimp. Hey, these have the heads and shells still on. Oh, I have to yank off all those little faces and legs and deterred my own shrimp and get all that crud under my nails and stuff. Oh, great. At least the shellfish is fresh. Maybe a little too fresh. Are clams supposed to be eaten raw? Maybe I should ask someone. But who? Will they just give me a blank stare and say something in Chinese? I don't look Chinese. So why would they answer my English question in Chinese? I gotta find out about these clams, though, so here goes. Well, that didn't work. So moving on to the, baked salmon. That looks nice. A little dry, but if I can just get a piece separated. Ah, crud. I got salmon juice on me. That's a tough salmon. Maybe that other fish will. Whoa, that's not fish. That's not fish. This is starting to seem like less of a good deal. I'll get some sushi and stuff then. You can't go wrong with sushi, right? And some fresh slices of melon, or whatever that is. That's strange. That thing over there next to the chicken wings, that looks like flan. Can't be, because why would they put that flan next to chicken wings? There's a whole dessert island over there. If that's a flan, then that's where it belongs. Sure looks like flan. I'm sure it's some kind of casserole or something. I'll just put it here next to my dry salmon and chicken wings. Hey, that is flan. What's flan doing on the meat island? And flan is Mexican. Why is that even here? Great, now I've got flan sauce all over my salmon. I could get a new plate, but these people are starting to look impatient. I'll just eat it. What next, Jell-O and the beef and broccoli? Wow, most of these crab legs look hollow. And apparently you can go wrong with sushi. Looks like I'll have lots of room for dessert. All that cake stuff looks great. Green cakes and pink cakes and yellow cakes and things that used to be cakes but are all rolled up. And Rice Krispie treats. What's that say? Mung bean cake. I thought it was strawberry. Oh well. Everyone else is taking one, so here goes. Lots of little colored cakes here. Rice Krispie treat looks okay. Maybe the third trip is the charm. Cake kind of spongy. Not very moist.
What flavor is this thing? That's not chocolate. That's not chocolate. Where's my scalding hot cup of tea? I gotta wash this down. Maybe the Rice Krispie treat next. Good old Rice Krispie treats. Can't go wrong with those. Okay, apparently you can. That's neither Rice Krispies nor marshmallow. Look at this mess. Have I even eaten anything, really? This is certainly not worth $24. My crab is hollow, my salmon has flan on it. What am I supposed to eat? Maybe this harmless-looking little dumpling. Oh, what is that? You know what? Fine, I'll peel my own shrimp. Where's the cocktail sauce? So let's say it's an average Friday night. It's date night. You're excited because you're going to try a new restaurant you've just heard of that opened up. Your buddy at work says he Yelped it. And he says, I Yelped that place, and Yelp said not to go because the steak is dry as jerky and the waiters are rude and the service is slow. Well, another friend says, I Yelped that place, and they have the best steak in town, and the waitresses are super cute. What? Do you people mind at all that these are the opinions of people you don't know? People you may not agree with or even like? And what makes Bean Guy 34 at Hotmail an expert on steak? He may not even be qualified to judge a nose-picking contest. He might think al dente is the guy in the next cubicle. He may be a chain smoker who might as well be eating cardboard. He may be French. He may be, okay, that's enough. You get it. He may be an idiot. There's obviously an empty space in people's lives for more pig-headed, unqualified reviews by morons of probably perfectly fine places. And the worst part is that everything is so conflicting. You know, people know how impressionable you are, and when people are thinking of going to a new place, they Yelp it first, and they're going to see a bad review right away, whether it's true or not. They use this to blackmail new businesses. If you don't give me a refund, I'm going to give you a bad review on Yelp. Just go there. These are normal, reasonable people who have a life, and they don't have the time to go on some website and say they went there and they were fine with it. Fill that empty space in your life with Food Fight. We're not loser part-time wannabe bloggers with sodium-bloated fast food livers and dead taste buds. We're real foodies who you can turn to for an opinion about a restaurant that hasn't been influenced by a bruschetta vendetta or the perkiness of the server's butts. I don't want to eat what some little putz barista thinks tastes good anyway. Stop going on Yelp. Get off your lazy butt and go taste things for yourself. Yelp is an outlet for jerks to be even bigger jerks and step all over the little guy. You want to help build the economy? You want to help small business? Leave Yelp to the millennials. They deserve it. Folks, there's always going to be something to avoid and something you can't always prevent, you know, the undesirable, gross, and chemically questionable things from getting into your mouths and bodies, unless you're one of the three people that live in a bubble with no cell phone. But I swear, I'll do everything I can to keep you from losing it. But people, we have got to calm down. There's too much information, too many tests, too many reports being done by too many people who do not have your best interests in mind. Everyone has an agenda. Everyone. And it's either self-serving, misguided, or just plain backwards, ignorant, and wrong. You can't always avoid all the bad stuff, but you can always add a little good stuff, the stuff that keeps you happy and moving forward, like a good steak, your family, your dog, 2 days off, a staycation where you eat nothing but Hot Pockets and watch Xena tapes. Marcus, I am looking in your direction.
I totally have done that.
You got to have a thing, because you'll never avoid all the bad stuff. You can just stay informed and smart and take it in stride, because at this rate, we're all going to be in the supermarket in disposable booties, pH testing every item after a 10-minute label analysis and detailed entry into our calorie-counting app before we record the steps to the cash register and drive our recycled hemp cloth bags home in our economy-sized chicken poop-powered 2013 Prius with the anti-bug splattering vegan-endorsed wind design. Also, we can cook our items to the right internal temperatures independently of the other items in separate pots to prevent cross-contamination. So your nephew, who thinks he's gluten intolerant and allergic to salt, so we can eat it on heat-sterilized, disposable, biodegradable, recycled mulch plates while sitting at least 3 feet from everybody so you don't catch their germs before kissing each other goodnight through full-body condoms and spraying your bedsheets with antimicrobials. This is the grim future, folks. You say killing germs with that desktop pump of sanitizer is the way to go? I say you're creating resistant superbugs that'll grow large enough to scare your pants off. I say live a little and lighten up a lot. So the next time someone offers you an unwrapped mint from a bowl that's been collecting sneezes on their desk for probably the past three straight years, take one. It's only polite. How do you think we got this far on this earth? It wasn't from avoiding all the germs. It was from eating them, digesting them, destroying them, and making them bow down and call us master. What happens to hotels where the service of bringing someone a sandwich and a soda to their room becomes paramount to engineering a bridge or erecting a monument? How does a meal you would otherwise pay $25 for anywhere else somehow cost $97 when a glorified baggage handler makes the trek on an elevator with a rolling cart from the kitchen to your smaller than it appeared on the website room? Have you traveled, maybe wanted to relax, get something brought to you rather than having to put pants on and go outside? Well, I'll tell you, better be prepared to shell out a small fortune on one of these least impressive meals you will have. From the $17 fruit cocktail, $20 if you want pineapple, to the $15 cup of French onion soup, to the $3 surcharge for a pickle spear for your sliders, you can bet every item on the menu will make you wish you took that doggy bag from the restaurant last night. How much is it all together? Well, don't answer yet, because once you finally rationalize the listed costs, your server will soon bring the bill. Yes, he arrives with a lovely cart with white linen tablecloth and napkins and maybe even a fresh flower. Well, at least it's a nice presentation, you say to your spouse. Just need to sign the receipt and add a few dollars for the nice man who wheeled this in, you think to yourself. What? A service fee? A resort surcharge? A predetermined gratuity? A second open line for additional tip? I think there were others. Well, too late now. It's embarrassing to complain or even keep that look of sticker shock on your face. Do you add the additional tip? Is it expected? At this point, does it even matter? You've just spent the equivalent of dining at a four-star restaurant. What's a few dollars now? Anyway, that's a lovely flower, and we can eat with our pants off. That's what a vacation is all about, isn't it? I'm sure the food will be first class. Well, that's generally about when things start to go downhill. That $24 spaghetti with meat sauce is both overcooked and seems to lack sauce as a vessel for the meat. Your assorted sliders are identical and seem to be losing heat quicker than Kevin Costner lost his British accent in Robin Hood. And those French fries are about as crispy as steamed asparagus. The rolls are as stale as Neil Saavedra's food show. And the shrimp in your shrimp cocktail are as limp as is. Well, moving on. At least you can take the baby ketchup and teeny tiny Tabasco bottles with you as souvenirs. And yes, you can eat away from home with no pants on.
And now it's time for a moment of clarification.
Listen, I know you're tired of the whole cupcake thing. I am. You think it's played out, right? If you talk to those people who line up around the block, standing in line waiting for 4 hours to pay $8 for a cute little pink cake with a softball-sized mound of bright pink sparkly icing, you start to get a clearer picture of the real issue. What's really going on here? Aside from the fact that almost every single one of these people is female, they talk about it like it's a way of life, like it's a belief system, like it's a cult. And if you are a cult cake member, you're only allowed to have friends who are cult cakers, because people are as divided on this issue as they are on smoking. Would you like cupcake section or non-cupcake section? You'll never find a donut shop that sells cupcakes. Oh, it's unheard of. If you even say the word cupcake in a donut shop, you know, the music stops. And these things are emasculating for the men, aren't they? The three or four men you see in line at a cupcake place, you can see them, they have their heads hanging down, and they're kind of hiding so no one will see them picking up the cupcakes for their girlfriends. And those cult cakers really stick together, too. They all get together for cult cake parties with a build-your-own icing bar and sprinkle buffet and pick your own cute little frilly, girly, estrogen-filled candy topper. Well, enjoy it while you last, you hopped-up-on-food-dye, sugar-rushed, muffin-top cult cakers. Cupcakes are having a moment that will soon be over. Soon, big, heavy, buttery, manly brownies are taking over. As soon as these lines aren't around the corner anymore, these places won't be able to pay their rent. And who's going to move in next? That's right. Wait until perfectly normal, manly men are standing in line around the block to get a nice brick-sized maple bacon brownie with a nice hefty, plain, unlogoed white mug full of black coffee. Yeah! Women won't be hanging out at bars anymore. They'll head straight to the line at the brownie shop because brownies are great and the men who eat them are straight. Can I get a little slow clap here?
The Governator, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, I want to say Merry Christmas to my special friends at Food Fight Radio, who showed me how to be strong and to be true to myself, yeah. And I'm proud to say that I may be a big, dumb musclehead who doesn't know a thing about running California, but at least now I could cook. Thank you, Claire and Marcus, for teaching me that foie gras is really fantastic. And now I am starting a duck farm. Yay!
Folks, this has been a wonderful year at Food Fight Radio, and I want to say a very special thanks to my favorite foodie friend.
Aw, thank you very much.
It's Stefan, our German fan.
Oh.
This is Claire Katz saying, hey, vegetarians, my food eats your food for breakfast.
Food Fight Radio on KCBQ is sponsored by Fran Vest International, Inc.